I don't know about you, but our Thanksgiving plans have changed. I think I mentioned that last week, that the mayor of Nashville was restricting travel for people in Nashville, and I kind of said that the Nashville mayor wouldn't know if my daughter came or not, but my daughter apparently would know that she came or not, so she decided not to come. So, and I thought about that, so when I discussed it, and I guess the only thing I wanted to say, I don't necessarily like that. I don't like the fact that my Thanksgiving isn't the way it's always been, and the breaking of tradition, but the Bible does say in Romans 13, let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there's no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. I don't want judgment. So I trust that, I don't know why my Thanksgiving's different and I don't like it that way, but I, by faith, will embrace Scripture and embrace that admonition and be happy about it. So I'm grateful that my daughter wants to obey her governing authorities. That's a good thing. Anyway, good to see you this morning. We've been talking about, you know, all that we've been going through in this social crisis, and I wanted to kind of hit a couple of quick points and go into another, I think, important subject on this idea of how do you survive these ever turbulent times. And I think we are in a time of turbulence. And I know none of us like that, but we don't get to choose that. We get to choose how we respond to it. So, and that's kind of the challenge of faith, is what do we do in the midst of the circumstances that we find ourselves. To remind you a little bit about a couple passages we started with, Ephesians 4, 13 and 14 says, until we all attain to the unity of the faith and knowledge of the Son of God, to mature manhood, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, so that we may no longer be children, tossed to and fro by the waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by human cunning, by craftiness and deceitful schemes. Maturity, as he describes it here, is when we get to the point that the tossing and turning doesn't change us, that we are firm in the midst of ever-changing circumstances. That's what maturity looks like, I think, according to this. Not getting caught up or blown by every wind of doctrine and human cunning, but that we are mature, that we're standing firm, and that is ultimately maturity is, as it says here, the stature of the fullness of Christ. And so that's my aim, that's my encouragement for us, and that's what I want to talk about this morning, is maybe a little more about how to get there and how to walk that out. The other passage that we looked at was in James, where it talks about consider it pure joy when you face trials of many kinds, and then he says, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him. But let him ask in faith with no doubting, for the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind. For that person must not suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. And again, the warning here for us people of faith is not to get caught up in the waves and the seas and the drivenness and the windiness of life, that we are to remain steadfast in the midst of turbulent times. And so that's what I want to talk about some this morning again, and continue that idea. And the passage that I wanted to focus on today, and the picture I want to focus on, is Hebrews 6. It says, we have this as a sure and steadfast anchor of the soul, a hope that enters into the inner place behind the curtain where Jesus has gone as a forerunner on our behalf, having become a high priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. Now, obviously the phrase that captures our attention is the idea of the anchor of the soul, a sure and steadfast anchor of the soul. And that's what I want to kind of focus our attention on this morning. As I understand it, and I'm no nautical person by any stretch of the imagination, But as I understand it, there's basically three types of anchors. There are sea anchors, not unlike the one we saw last week in Acts 27, kind of a break anchor. It doesn't really attach itself to anything. It just is weight that kind of slows things down. And so it kind of just holds, is kind of a slow you down, hold you in the midst of that driven situation. Then you have just kind of a general weight anchor that goes to the bottom and just heavy enough it holds you stable. And then you have the one that's pictured here, which is what we most commonly think of, like the Popeye tattoo, is a hooking anchor, one that attaches itself to something at the bottom and then holds yourself steadfast because it's attached to something else. In this passage, Jesus technically is the one taking our anchor and attaching it to the inner place behind the curtain. And of course, that picture in the Hebrew, in the Jewish mindset in Hebrews here, is the picture of going into the holy temple, going into the holiest place in the holy temple, going in where God dwells, going in where the Ark of the Covenant is, and where God's dwelling and glory resides, and attaching your anchor to that, to the most center place of God in the whole universe, and attaching yourself to that. Jesus, as our forerunner, takes our anchor, attaches us to God, and that is the place that we find sure and steadfast hope. Does that make sense? And so that's kind of the picture that he paints. Now, maybe you did. I think you did. Okay. All right. Y'all can hear me? Okay. That's a little too close. I'm going to swallow that thing. All right. I know you're supposed to be close, but all right. Okay. Now we're going to probably do a mic switch. Is that what we're doing? Okay. So, yeah, we're trying to do this in the most smooth way you can without disrupting class in any way.
Did I get this time off, by the way? Did I give you a couple extra minutes for class?
Sure.
Whatever you want. All right. It doesn't matter if the live stream goes off when it goes off. So it's like, who cares? Feel good about it. Okay. Is it already on?
Yes.
Okay. Am I on again? I'd rather do my class. All right. We'll do that. Okay. So where are we? Okay. Anchors. So one of the things I said, by the way, the key to success, right, is adaptability. Right? All right. Thank you. So I want to think about that idea of what it means to anchor in our current situation. So the first point I want to make about that is anchor versus cultural currents. You know, not this past summer because it was illegal, but the summer before we took our family to Hilton Head to the beach for a few days. which is a great experience. While the kids and grandkids all slept in, Selwyn and I got up early in the morning and packed all of our stuff down to the beach, about 500 pounds worth of tents and chairs and toys and stuff, and set it all up. And then they just woke up and said, "Oh, wow, wow, that's great." And then they played while we tried to recover and then think about the fact that we got to pack it all up and take it back later. But anyway, they had fun. But they would go, it was interesting because they would go out right in front of us to play in the water, and within fairly short order, they'd be down there. You know? And I'd go, "Where'd they go?" And after a day or so, you kind of learn, okay, you knew about when they're going to be moving and what that pace was because the current took them that direction, right? The flow of the water would take. Now, they didn't necessarily realize that, right? You know, they thought, you know, they'd come out and say, "Oh, you're supposed to, where did you go? You know, oh, you're way down there now." And that's the nature of currents. We don't necessarily notice them. It doesn't look really different. And yet we find ourselves one day, we kind of pop our head up and go, "Wow, how'd we get here?" And it's important that we recognize that not only during turbulent times, but in our culture, we've faced some pretty dramatic cultural shifts over time. And it comes in a lot of different ways. Obviously, our dress changes, our language changes. Selwyn and I have always, since we've known each other, and certainly since we've been married, we have Friday nights, our movie night. We watch different movies. We went through, I think I told most of you this before, but when we first got married, we watched the top 100 movies of all time. We finished those, and then we started watching less than good movies. So we watch all these movies, but we have a criteria that we won't watch anything more than PG-13 as a rating. But we've noticed in the last couple of years that rating has changed because what is allowed in PG-13 now is much different than what was allowed then. And so now we're kind of going to go, "Whoa, we got to change our plan here because this isn't working very well." I told Selwyn yesterday, I said, "Well, maybe what we should do is a theme and a focus of our movie watching is watch Disney movies because we had little kids in a long time, so all those movies we haven't seen. So, you know, Aladdin and Mulan and all those kind of things will maybe be our next theme movie nights." But we've seen it too, you know, even in television, watching television shows is difficult with the shifts that happen in our society just over time. What's allowable? It's like, you know, I haven't watched a lot of current TV, and you watch something, it's like, "Wow, how'd that happen?" You know, like, what happened here? We watch the BBC, some of their TV shows, because they're not quite like that. It's interesting because they'll have warnings about language. And then you watch it, and I'm thinking, I don't think I heard a word that I would consider inappropriate. However, they speak British, and there's a lot of words I don't know what they mean at all. So they may be cursing up a storm, and I just don't know it. But at least it's not offensive to me. But things change, and culture changes, and things change around us. And I think one of the illustrations of that, I tried to think of a way to illustrate that, and I thought about, you know, TV shows. I remember when I was a kid, Father Knows Best, Dad Knew Everything. He was the smart one, and all the kids were learning from Dad, that kind of thing. And the Waltons, you know, you had that kind of picture of families on TV. You had, you know, controversial families as well, but still kind of intact. Mom and Dad are married and that kind of thing, kind of family with all in the family. The Brady Bunch, kind of addressing the blended family. Still, Mom and Dad were in charge, and, you know, the kids did goofy things, and Mom and Dad kind of saved them and rescued them from their chaos type of thing that was typical of families. Family Ties, I thought was always interesting because it was kind of like, back in that era, Mom and Dad are the ex-hippie liberals and the kids were the conservatives and that type of thing. But still intact family and that type of thing. The Cosby Family, of course, is, I remember watching that as a kid, or as my kids watching that, and every Thursday night and getting that impression. And The Simpsons were popular, which I did not watch in my family. in which Dad was an idiot and Bart Simpson was the smartest person on the planet. Certainly want to teach Andrew that he was smarter than me. But you see these trends in family. Still mom and dad are together, right? And of course, Married with Children, I never watched that, but again, a cultural trend in terms of defining family and the attitudes of families. Now we got Family Guy, which kind of took Homer Simpson to a whole nother level of idiocy. And of course has a talking dog and a baby that's smarter than everybody else. And then of course Modern Family is probably the most current one. But you see just the shift in family, how we view families. There's a ton of others. And I was thinking, you know, obviously families have gotten broken and stuff over time, and certainly reflecting that, I can understand. But there's certainly a drive in our culture to promote those kind of things. I even think about commercials now, I noticed it a lot lately that, you know, couples aren't just men and women anymore, and all the advertising couples are all kinds of combinations. And you see that kind of cultural drift in which, you know, as a parent, our kids not having our, not, I mean, we come, I mean, I look at this and we, most of us, if you're my age or so, you look at that and say, yeah, you can see the degradation of the presentation of family. However, for our kids, they don't know anything but those kind of things. They didn't start anywhere, but Family Guy may be their beginning point of what family looks like. And so that becomes cultural trends that shift things in our society. And so those kind of things happen subtly, whether it be through media, through attitudes, or through peers and friends and different things. We see those kind of shifts. And if we're not attentive, we can easily get carried along with that drift. In fact, you know, I've wondered, you know, what cultural adjustments will this pandemic leave us with? I remember, you know, a number of years ago, we had the big tornado outbreak. And then we shifted a lot of our attitudes about weather from that, to the point that, you know, we'll cancel school if there's a forecast 4 days from now to rain, you know, because we got to keep the kids safe and we don't want to get, you know, and so we have this huge kind of change. I mean, when I moved here, it's like, hey, yeah, there's a tornado coming. We think maybe, I don't know, no biggie. Now it's like, oh, there's one somewhere, and we gotta, you know, hunker down I'm not against sheltering for tornadoes, but the kind of the overreaction that we have in our culture because of it is part of that shift that we see in things. I remember they have bus stop warnings and stuff like that. I remember my parents kicked me out of the house and sent me the bus, man. You just got on the bus. It's like now, well, it's too cold for them to be at the bus stop today. What? Well, you know, we got those kind of shifts. But we got those today, too. I mean, I wonder, you know, are we going to go through every, you know, illness seasons with closing schools or going back to virtual school all every year? Is that going to become a seasonal thing during flu season? We'll just all stay home during that section of the school year. You know, wearing mask and not mask and those kind of things. Cleanliness, obviously. Even church, how does church get defined? Obviously, we are experiencing those kind of changes within church. How is church going to be defined in the future? Most churches have started online church services and those kind of things and streaming type deals. And so now we're all going to define our membership based upon how many people come to the building and how many people watch us online. However, you know, that's a tremendously different dynamic in terms of fellowship and in terms of engagement with people, that type of thing. I mean, I was talking to a pastor a while back, and he said, yeah, it's kind of like the church online kind of like has moved the back row of the church like way back, you know. And, you know, where does that take us, you know, when we say, I could get dressed up and get all cleaned up and, you know, and drive, you know, 30 minutes to go to church for 2 or 3 hours, or I could just stay in my PJs and turn on the TV for 30 minutes, knock it out, and get on with my day, right? And so, you know, what's that going to do to the church? How's that going to impact us? I think is a obviously things we don't know, but those are shifts that are going to happen. And maybe, you know, we'll remember the day when we all used to get together and all that kind of stuff, and our kids may never remember that day, you know, at some point. And that just maybe this is the way we do it. And even how we greet one another, I'm not the most social guy in the world. And so meeting people has always been awkward to me. You know, it's like, the awkwardness of that first encounter. And now it's just got complicated, right? I mean, we look at each other like, okay, do you stick your hand out? Do you elbow bump? Do you just nod? Do you wave from 6 feet? What do you do? It's like, and you don't know because everyone has a different sensitivity. So you're like, and it's like, now if you mention your name, I'll never remember that. I don't remember if I'm supposed to bump you with my elbow or not. I mean, it's like, it's kind of difficult, and it's a whole nother change, and it's hard to understand what we're supposed to be doing in those situations. In fact, I remember when all this first came out, I saw on the computer, I saw this thing. It talked about the Wuhan shake. I don't know if you heard about that, but, you know, of course, this whole thing originated in Wuhan. The Wuhan shake, they go up and you tap feet with each other. That's how you shake hands. That kind of, it's called the Wuhan shake. Maybe that's what we should do. I don't know, but it really redefined. In fact, wearing masks, you know, I remember early on, one of my friends had a bandana on, and he was putting on his bandana saying, I would have never imagined doing this to walk into a bank. Yeah. And it's like, you know, it used to be, you know, now we're supposed to meet each other with masks on. Used to be we put masks on and you can't know me, right? We used to rob banks because I have a mask on. You can't identify me. And so now I'm meeting people and through their mask, they say this muffled version of their name, which I can't understand anyway, and nor do I remember because I'm not paying attention to your name, but now I can't even understand you because you're mumbled, and then I'm supposed to remember you because of the color of your eyes or the style of your hair. You know, it's like, that's going to be challenging. I wonder, how are we going to rob banks in the future? You know, put a mask over our eyes? It's like, if you see my mouth, you won't know who I am. I mean, it's like, But it's kind of this big cultural change that's happening. And these currents are going on in our society. And if we're not paying attention, we'll end up swept away. And one day we'll be like my kids going, how in the world did we get down there? What happened? And so I think it's important that we need to beware of that. The passage in Hebrews, where we got Hebrews 6 passage from, in Hebrews 2 a little earlier, says, therefore we must pay much closer attention to what we have heard, lest we drift away from it. I think that's such a powerful phrase. Lest we drift away from it. I know in church circles we've talked for a long time about people falling away. But I've seldom met somebody who literally just fell away. Like one day they were just totally there, and then one day they just fell. What happens is we drift away. We kind of let go of things. We kind of, we lose our connection, and we kind of just let things drift. And then one day we ask the question, how did we get there? Well, it happened a long time ago. That's a big conversation, by the way, at His Way a lot. When guys relapse, one of the things we recognize is that their relapse started a long time ago because they started with attitudes and decisions and choices that began to let go of some core things that was maintaining their sobriety. And then one day they're back to drinking or using or even overdosing. But it wasn't a decision that was made that day. It was a decision made a long time ago. And those drifts started happening. They started losing hold of their recovery over time. And we do the same thing in our faith. Is we can easily start just kind of, we let go of little things. And right now, you know, church fellowship has been a core ingredient to the Christian experience, and it was quickly torn away from us. And for some of us, and I venture to say this will happen, for some of us, it will be torn away and we will never regain it. It will be gone. And we will wonder what happened and how did we get where we are. It's going to be a challenge for us as a church to, when we get past, if we ever do, but if we get past mask wearing and we get back to meeting together, it will be an endeavor for us just simply to go out and see how many of those people we can get back to us. Because I imagine we've lost some. We lost them when we were vibrantly active together. So certainly that drift we need to be mindful of and aware of in our own lives. Letting go of little things. You know, none of us make bad decisions all in just we go from doing something really good to something really radically bad. We usually end up kind of letting go of things along the way till that bad thing doesn't seem so bad anymore. And it's just one next step. It's not a huge fall. It's just the next step in the process. And that's the kind of thing that Hebrews warns us against. We got to anchor. We got to hold fast to those things. So we got to anchor ourselves against the cultural currents, however they may come, I think is important. The second one I want to talk about is anchor versus kind of our heart winds. Not only do we have the cultural things and the currents, but we also have the internal things that happen in our lives. I mean, there's a beautiful portrayal of that, by the way, in Mark chapter 4 and 5, because in Mark chapter 4, you have the story of Jesus calming the sea, right? They're in the boat. There's this external storm. Jesus is asleep in the boat. If you don't care about us, you know, you're sleeping, why don't you care about us? Jesus wakes up, calms the storm, and so the external things are calmed, and so then there's kind of a whew. But then they get to the other side, and they meet a demon-possessed man whose storm is now internal. It's not an external storm. It's an internal storm that's creating external tribulations. And for many of us, that's the storms that we have to face too. It's not just the cultural currents. It's also our own hearts and our own attitudes that end up affecting our lives, whether it be our self-doubts, our fears, as we've talked about them, our control issues, our anger, our greed, our materialism, our self-centeredness, our insecurities, our depressions, anxieties, jealousies, lusts, all these kind of things that are within us that can also cause us to lose heart and to lose focus quickly. You know, one of the things that I appreciate that my wife has said for a long time, and I've quoted her on a regular basis, is feelings are not necessarily an indicator of reality. Just because you feel like something doesn't mean it is. One of the things we're terrible at, by the way, is we feel like other people have attitudes about us, and we have no idea whether they do or not. We've never asked them. We meet somebody, and maybe because we went to shake their hand and they simply elbow bumped me, I also have a feeling about that. And I think, well, they must not like me because they would have shook my hand and maybe they don't think I'm, but we get all this stuff. And internally, we get into this because of our insecurities, our self-doubts. When people respond to us, we read into that all these things, and then we have all these feelings that well up with inside of us that may not be particularly accurate to what really is going on. And we got to measure those things. We got to hold ourselves accountable to those things. We can't allow ourselves to be swept up in that wind. I have conversations with guys a lot. They're all upset because so-and-so did blah, 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 and that means that they feel da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, whatever that is. I'm like, did you ask him? Have you talked to him? No. Maybe that'd be a good start. Maybe good to say, hey, I went to shake your hand and you elbow bump me. Do you not like me? I just gotta say where it goes. And then I say, no, that's not it at all. But we don't. We just get in our heads and it feeds into our self-doubts, our insecurities, and all these things, and we get alienated from one another. And Satan is licking his chops at the idea that he's now separated us because we get into our feelings. And I heard a good quote a long time ago that some of us measure our insides to everyone else's outsides. And a lot of times, you know, those deep, deep feelings, we don't know what those feelings are in other people. We just see their externals. And so we measure our real life to their superficial life, and we feel like we're lacking. You know? And so it's like, everyone looks good on Facebook, right? And we want to measure, you know, we want to measure the inner mess of our lives to everyone's Facebook status. That's probably not accurate. It's probably not wise to do that. And that gets all these feelings and all these impressions going on in our lives. And so I warn us against those things. One of the fundamental things that I notice in people, especially insecure people, which is all of us, is that we have an overactive PR department. We've hired way too many PR people, and they're, you know, and you ever get a department that's overbuilt and then you can't ever get rid of any of them because they all got big salaries and they don't want to leave? A lot of our PR departments have got that way. So we're always working hard to give the impression of. And I think we would do well in our faith to fire our PR departments and just get real and just be honest. And why don't we talk, why don't we start talking, why don't I start sharing my insides with your insides? Instead of the insides to outsides problem. That would be, I think, an important way that I can guard myself against that. Feelings. I'm not, to be honest, a particularly feeling-oriented kind of guy. Not that I don't have feelings, I do. In fact, I have feelings right now about some of you. But anyway, besides that, I do, and yet I think they need to have their proper place. And I think that's become our problem. Feelings are kind of like having preschoolers in your family. They're great to have. They bring a lot of fun and joy. But you don't want them to run the family. You know? You know, if you got your preschooler in the family van, you're headed to Disney World. I mean, I'm sure Jimmy's excited about that, but you don't want to let Jimmy decide what roads to drive and how fast to go and where we're going to eat and all those kind of things because it probably won't go well. Dad needs to handle those things. Mom needs to handle those things. Jimmy, well, when he gets to Disney, we'll have fun together. And I think we need to do that a lot with our feelings. We need to anchor deep in our faith and just kind of accept, yeah, I have feelings and I can admit that. I'm not going to respond. They're not going to drive my boat or my van or whatever illustration I'm using here. But they need to be included, certainly, without driving the boat. So, you know, I remember two key intersections in my life. Remember one, when I was at Pepperdine University, and I'd been invited to go on an archaeological dig to the Middle East. And I remember I really wanted to do that, and yet I really wanted to be devoted to ministry, and I was going to have to take, you know, like a summer off to go do that. And I remember at the time, and it's probably not as big a deal as it seemed in my head, but I really felt like it was a decision, am I going to be involved in working and loving people with the gospel, or am I going to get involved in academia and dig in the dirt and find research things? And I basically decided not, that I didn't want to, but I felt like it was an important decision for me because I decided not to go down academia, instead go down ministry, if that makes sense. For me, that was one of the ones. And one of the other ones I remember vividly is I studied the Bible with a guy, this was in New Jersey, studied the Bible with a guy, had a good Bible study. It was a Friday. It was been a long week. I remember driving out and hitting Highway 130. And all of a sudden, I just had this overwhelming feeling. I could turn right and go back to my family, which were two screaming kids, bills that I couldn't pay, a car that had a flat tire, and a wife that wasn't happy. Or I could turn left and go to the strip club and just forget it all. And I remember seriously thinking hard about what I was going to do in that moment. And I guarantee you my feelings did not want to turn right. But I did. And I'm thankful because I may not have made it here if I hadn't. And so there's times when I think we acknowledge our feelings, but that doesn't necessarily mean our feelings get to decide the ultimate destination if we anchor deep and we anchor solid. So my point is, anchor deep in Jesus. And I'd love to talk about that, except I'm running out of time because we had this microphone thing. So I want to get to one other passage that I want to look at for a second that I think emphasizes this idea to me, and I wanted to share it with you because I think it really reflects the heart of certainly this idea. And it's from Psalms chapter 1. So Psalms, the first verse says, "Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers." So obviously those are nots. And if you notice the pathway of this, it's a blessed man is one walks implies that you're kind of passing by, right? Stands implies that you're creating a greater level of permanency. And then sitting means I'm in. And so it's a movement to closeness to wickedness, sinners, and scoffers. And so it's a warning, obviously, about that movement. But instead, his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. Instead, he delights in the law of the Lord. And I would just challenge you in this. What do you delight in? You know, do you delight in ice cream? Do you delight in Alabama football? Do you delight in fishing? Do you delight in cooking? Do you delight in your favorite TV shows? I mean, when you go through your day and you look forward to that moment when you can finally get in the clothes you want to wear, with the slippers you want to have on, with the seat you want to be in, is that the Word of God for you? Is that the law of the Lord for you? Is that that place? Because that is the place that he says will be the blessed place. That when I anchor in my day, I have a lot of things that go on. But when I finally come to rest, when I finally come to delight, when I finally come to rootedness in my life, it's in the Word of God. It's in His truth. Because, see, God's unchanging truth stands against our feelings. It stands against the culture. It just remains. And a lot of people in our culture, and I've heard it now for 60 years, will say, well, the Bible was good for them, but things have changed. Right? Things have changed. That's the culture that wants to get you drugged down the shore that says that. Because if you delight in the law of the Lord, you'd quickly discover that it's the anchor that keeps you solid. In fact, I would say in most families, I mean, I talked to our guys at His Way, that a lot of them have been tossed all over the place. And when you talk to them about who are the people who have held you tight, they're the people that have been anchored exactly where God calls us to be anchored. And so our delight is there. We meditate. Now, I hear us say, oh, I can't meditate. I'm not good at meditation. That's not my thing. I love a Rick Warren quote in Purpose Driven Life where he says, if you have the ability to worry, you have the ability to meditate. Because it's the same thing. It's just a different object. So if you worry, then you have no excuse for not meditating on the Word of God. Just got to choose your object. That you can do. So I encourage you to. And then he describes, he is like a tree planted by streams of water that yields its fruit in its season. Its leaf does not wither, and all that he does, he prospers. That's the beauty of the blessed man, of the blessed person who is anchored deep, who delights in the law of the Lord, who meditates on that law, and doesn't get swept up with the sinners and the scoffers and the mockers and all that type of thing, that we live as beams of light in a dark place because we don't grumble and complain. We're those people. And we are trees planted by streams of water that yields, I mean, every season it has its fruit. It never loses its fruit. It is always on time, all the time. Leaf never withers. It's always shade. It's always a place, a home, a hospitality for others. That's the person anchoring deep in Jesus, abiding in his word, that becomes a relief and a refuge for those looking and struggling and wandering in their own way. We become their oasis and we prosper. And then he warns of the other. The wicked are not so, but are like chaff that the wind drives away. You know, just picture that. The difference between a tree firmly planted by streams of water and a tumbleweed. That's the difference. That's the difference. Are you anchoring deep in Jesus? So I want to encourage you. Let Jesus be the anchor of your soul.
Thank you.